This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino as we come to you live from T-Mobile Park. Mariners getting set for their series with the Diamondbacks, three-game series, and then the Boston Red Sox come to town. This is a huge homestand for the Mariners, who are just a couple of games out in the wild card race. Interesting day. Very cloudy, but warm out here.
Yeah, it's pretty warm. A little muggy, maybe?
Yeah, a little muggy.
Do you think your 100% roof closed record is in jeopardy, possibly?
No. I feel good about it. I consulted with my experts, my analysts, and I think we've come up with a very firm decision on the roof.
It's hard to miss considering we're sitting right here looking at the roof.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're not at Edgar's Cantina. For those people who are used to going down there, we've been put up here in the radio booth. They wanted to keep us away from people because they felt we were a danger of some sort. So we've been left to our own devices up here.
Well, it's because last time we were out there, they lost.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
They said we got to put you in a new spot to create a new streak.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And by the way, yeah, Karen and Nancy, who always come by, and they were going to bring cookies this time, our Mariner gals. And, now we can't get them, but hopefully they'll wave to us from the aisles down there.
So. Yeah, we're just right next door to the broadcast booth where you often see Rick Riz and Goldsmith and all those guys there. So coming up in just a few minutes, Sean Doolittle will be joining us from the Mariners bullpen. I don't think he'll actually be in the bullpen talking to us, but perhaps we'll catch a glimpse of him down there in the clubhouse or the dugout. So we'll talk to him in just a few minutes, get his take with 22 games left in the season, how things are going there. Matt Taylor, the radio play-by-play man for the Indianapolis Colts, will join us at 3 o'clock, give us a look at this team as we get you set for the game on Sunday. John Clayton at 4, Ryan Roland-Smith will be with us at 5, and then we got Mean Text coming up in the final hour of the program, it being Friday and all. So you guys can send in your submissions right now. You can start right now, I should say, 710-710 to the Mac and Jacks text line. So a lot to cover in a short amount of time here. And I know we'll get deeper into this in just a little bit because Sean Doolittle should be with us any moment. But what a game last night. What a way to kick things off. That was compelling. I was in it. I found myself rooting for the Cowboys, which was weird. I don't know that I've ever rooted for the Cowboys, and I think it's just be on the heels of watching the Hard Knocks series, and you get kind of familiar with some of the long shots or some of the stories, not so much Dak or you know, Ezekiel Elliott, those guys, but some of the guys that were, you know, hey, they're on the bubble, they're going to make the team, they're not going to make the team. You end up rooting for these guys, you get invested in their story. So yeah, I just kind of found myself not over the top rooting, but yeah, I was hoping they were going to pull it off, and they didn't. But it was a compelling game, man. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great for the first one, and saw a lot of cramping out there. I thought, you know, Chris Collinsworth made a good point that, you know, in the preseason you don't get a chance to, and we didn't really factor this in, but you better really be in shape. And even if you're in really good shape, there's nothing like getting into game shape. You know, and like I always say, when you get to the field and, you know, the kickoff happens and the clock starts, there's no stopping it, man. They're not stopping to, hey, you know, I need a rest over here. And, you know, your best players need to be in shape and ready to go. You saw lots of guys cramping and stuff like that. So, yeah, something to consider and to think about, you know, what's going to happen. But with none of the starters for the Seahawks playing in the preseason.
Yeah, it'll hopefully won't see much of that. They'll I don't know, what do? They give you like a pregame IV? Are they just giving you bottle after bottle of Gatorade? Is there some preemptive strike they can throw out there?
Yeah, you know, we played my senior year down in Texas, and it was our first game, and it was really hot down there. And I remember I got to say, Stanford did things right. Like my senior year, we also went to Japan, and so they had a whole schedule, our sleep schedule, of what, you know, when we were supposed to go to bed. And sometimes it involved, like, you know, when you got there, go to bed at like 3 o'clock and then adjust and everything, and did a really good job with that. The same thing with the hydration. Remember the game quarters
where you had to drink beer when you bounced a quarter.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah. Listen, the sweet little tender Bob did not play quarters. Everybody's played quarters.
I've heard mention of that game in passing.
So you bounce a quarter into a community cup, which yeah. I think you would probably have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Everybody handling the quarter, and then you drink it.
May anyway. Have had my own cup.
Yeah. So we, Bob had his own cup. So, all right. You know, we'll tell this story later. What's more important is that we need to talk to Sean Doolittle.
I'm sure he's played quarters a time or two in his life. Sean Doolittle of your Seattle Mariners is with us now. Hello, Sean.
What's up, guys?
Have you ever played quarters?
It's been a while, but yes.
Okay. We just had to throw that out there. We were talking about it, and why not throw it your way?
How that came up on a sports program, we don't know.
Yeah. What does
it's
drinking and sports have to do with each other?
It's a sport.
Those two go hand in hand. Hey, you know, you're one of the new additions to this team, and so you haven't been here for this whole ride, but just in the time you've been here, give us a sense of what it's been like. You're a guy that's played for a couple of different teams, so you've been in different clubhouses. How has that transition been for you, and just you fitting in with the group here?
Oh man, it's been a pretty smooth transition, and I think that kind of speaks to the group that's in that clubhouse. It's a really good group. They are really close knit. You can feel the chemistry in there, but you know, they welcomed me in pretty quick, and I feel like I got my feet underneath me now, and I'm really excited to be a part of this group moving forward, coming down the stretch. It's been fun. The close games is gets a little bit stressful, but I think I'm starting to get used to it. It seems like every game we're staring extra innings right in the face, but there's something to be said for the way this team has a knack for pulling out games and finding a way to get wins.
Yeah, what do you think that knack is, Sean? I know it's hard to put your finger on, but, you know, we just all year have been – is it the youth? Is it just the chemistry you mentioned? Is it some combination?
So I feel like it's definitely a combination, but a couple of the things that jumped out to me were, one is the youth, kind of the energy that this group plays with, you know, for all nine innings. Nobody takes innings off. Nobody – they never quit. I think the other thing is the way that this team gets contributions from every guy up and down the roster. You know, it's not like we sit around and wait for one or two guys to try to come through for us or come up in a big spot. We've had contributions from everybody. And when you're not counting on just one or two guys and everybody is contributing, I think that can really help you, especially over the course of a long season, for sure.
Just in terms of the expectations, and I don't know how much you were aware of what was going on in this clubhouse in this city before you got here, but the expectations were set very low in that management, and people were talking about, hey, this year not so much about wins and losses, it's more about development. You know, it was a tear down, a rebuild, a lot of young guys. So you kind of expected inconsistent play. Maybe we weren't looking at the postseason this year. And here you are a couple of games out of the wild card, and everybody's going, how is it they're able to do this when there's, you know, the run differential is minus 50, whatever it is. It's not sustainable, yet they've sustained it. Do you get a sense that the clubhouse is light because there isn't the expectation? They weren't technically supposed to be competitive this year. It's not like the Yankees or Dodgers where they're spending boatloads of money and, boy, you better find your way into the playoffs. Feels like there'd be kind of a lightness to it, being as there's no expectation.
I don't know. I don't know if it's because there's no expectation. I feel like there's a little bit of the idea that guys have embraced the fact that, you know, maybe this team arrived a year or two ahead of schedule. Maybe that a lot of people around the league thought that the success of this team wasn't sustainable and that we were going to fall off at some point. I think there's a little bit, we kind of have a little bit of a chip on our shoulder. Like we have something to prove, like people have been counting us out for the majority of the season. And, you know, now here we got like 23, 25 games left and we want to finish the season strong and show everybody that we're for real. But when you embrace that identity, kind of that underdog role, kind of that team that's being overlooked, that can be really fun when everybody kind of buys in and works together to prove everybody wrong. And I think there's definitely some of that going on here.
Hey, Sean, we've talked a lot about the chemistry and everything. So as a pitcher, when you come in and, you know, with Tom Murphy and Cal Raleigh, you got to get to know your catchers pretty quickly. Tell us about that process. I mean, you sit down, just have a conversation, get to know each other. Tell us about how you establish that with your catchers.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. You know, the first day I got here, I kind of sat down with both of them. They came and found me in the clubhouse after stretch and kind of went through some stuff just about pitch usage and some sequences that I felt comfortable with. And I've been working on some things in Cincinnati that I wanted to try to implement here. And so we talked about that as well. You know, both guys, the relief group that I've been spending a lot of time with in the bullpen, they were super positive about them. They love throwing to these guys. And, you know, I got really good vibes when I was talking to them. And I think we've worked pretty well together. The times that I gave up a few runs, but that wasn't their fault. I mean, they've done such a great job of handling the staff all year. And now, you know, I'm back in the American League for the first time in 4 or 5 years. So they know these hitters a lot better than me, even though, you know, you try to do your homework and learn as much as you can before the series starts. I think they've done an awesome job handling the staff all year long, especially that relief group in the bullpen. So it's been fun to work with them.
Does it feel like cramming for a test when you come to a team mid-season? I know you did it one other time in your career when you went from Oakland to Washington in 2017, but then from Washington to Cincinnati, you had the off-season to, I guess, sort of get acclimated. So what's the biggest difference going to a team? You know what's happening in the off-season, you have time to prepare, versus mid-season, hey, you were on this team, now you're a member of this team, get ready.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, like, you just finding kind of where you fit in the team, in the clubhouse. You know, a lot of times when you join a team in the middle of the season, you took somebody's spot. There was somebody that was here that had been here all year, and, you know, now they're not. And so, like, you want to be respectful of that. You don't want to come in and, you know, be too loud or ruffle any feathers or anything like that. I tried to find kind of where I fit in. You know, keep your head down. You know, show the group that you're here to work and that you're grateful for the opportunity to be here. And you know, I've tried to just be ready to help kind of wherever I can, wherever I fit into the mix. And we do have some young guys down there, so to be able to help out, you know, Joe Smith and bring some of that experience down there to, you know, help bring these guys along as we continue through this playoff push. So, you know, from a baseball standpoint, like, I feel like the fact that a lot of these guys in the American League that I haven't seen them in a while, I feel like that's kind of an advantage. So that I think that's one of the easier adjustments to make. You know, you just got to find your spot in the clubhouse and fit in with the team.
Sean, do you feel like this interview has gone pretty well? Because we heard that either you or is it your wife that has a huge Twitter following, and just wondering if they'll pump up our show a little bit, maybe. is it you or your wife? I said, you know, depending on how the interview goes, I think it's been really a nice conversation. What do you think?
I agree, man. I'll tell you what. The Seattle media so far has been great. But yeah, we both my wife and I have, I guess, pretty decent Twitter following, certainly outsized for you know, a one inning reliever. I've been a lot quieter this year. You know, getting older, trying to make some adjustments, especially now, you know, coming to a new city, try to tone down some of the distractions and focus on winning games. So
are you a guy that will read the replies or the comments? Because it would seem, especially for a reliever, I mean, you're out there maybe just to face three guys, and maybe, as you point out, sometimes it doesn't go your way. Well, you know how fans are. They're going to let you know how they feel about it in a very, very blunt way on social media because it's safe that way. But do you read that, or do you tend to ignore it? How do you feel about the whole social media and the access to fans?
I think I try not to read that stuff. Sometimes it finds you anyway, just because there can be so much of it, and it's hard to not see it. It's always weird when you're just kind of scrolling through your phone after a game and there's stuff about you on the timeline that you didn't necessarily seek out. But I feel like most of the time social media is a good thing. I feel like it's a way for players to connect with fans, in a way that, you know, doesn't otherwise, get to happen. You know, it's different than a post game interview or a press conference or something like that. But there is the other side of it too, where you have, a lot of pitching coaches on Twitter that offer up their, opinions on your performance and, you know,
a lot of advice.
Take it with a grain of salt. Yeah. You have a lot of pitching coaches, a lot of GMs on Twitter that you know, have it all figured out, and, it can be frustrating, but it you know, it's part of it, and you kind of try not to put too much stock in it, try not to pay too much attention to it, focus on what you got to do each day, and you know, don't read the comments. Never, ever read the comments.
Yeah. Well, Sean, where do you make your home? And, you know, in this situation, you know, you had a last-minute deal where you're coming to Seattle. Does family come with you, or where do you make your home, and is everybody ready to be mobile?
Yeah. At this stage in our baseball career, my wife and I have gotten really good at packing, and we've gotten really good at being flexible. So, okay. She's a superhero. My wife, Erin, she's absolutely a superhero. She helps so much in so many different ways, you know, throughout the course of a season. She's my therapist. She's my mental skills coach. She keeps things, you know, on the right track for me, in so many ways. And, you know, moving here, from Cincinnati, we packed up, we drove back. Our home is in Chicago. That's where we live. And then I flew out here by myself. My wife was with me on the road trip. She's kind of going to go back and forth. She's going to be out here, you know, next week, you know, for the back end of this homestand. Seattle was always one of our favorite cities to visit when I was coming here as a visiting player. So it's awesome to be back here. And, you know, we're just going to hopefully keep extending our stay in the hotel. I'll keep racking up those points. We make the playoffs. I get an extra month in the hotel, and then our off-season vacation will take care of itself. So it's a win-win.
That's awesome that you have that support group, man. That's everything.
I'm very, very lucky.
Yeah. How long have you lived in Chicago?
5 years. We bought a house there after we got married. So I'm new to Chicago. My wife grew up there.
Okay, because I lived out there for 5 years. I lived in Roscoe Village, which is right by Wrigley, about a mile away. But the one thing I heard, and I'm curious if you agree with this, because I was out there, summer's incredibly humid and hot. Winters are unlike anything I've ever felt in my life. But they said, oh, you'll get used to it. You get used to it. I never got used to it, Sean. In 5 years, I never got used to it. Are you used to that weather?
No, I don't think you can get used to it. It's a different kind of cold.
Yeah, you'll get hurt out there.
You know, the same way people in Arizona talk about how it's a dry heat, you know, the Chicago, it's different, right? It's different. And in Chicago, you get the wind, I think, definitely plays a factor. But, you know, the 20, 30 degrees there feels colder than it does anywhere else that I've been. So, it's a little bit backwards, spending an off season in Chicago as a baseball player, but, yeah. We love it. We love it. We'll probably go out to Arizona at some point, to kick the, off season training into high gear. Hopefully we don't have to think about that for a while. We got a lot of baseball left to play, and we're looking forward to playing, into October for sure.
Well, Sean, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks so much for taking the time, and I hope you're right that you continue to rack up those points because you have to extend your stay here. We're looking at a postseason, so I'm pulling for your points, man. Thanks so much for taking time with us.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Sean.
There you go. There's Sean Doolittle of your Seattle Mariners as they get set. Game one of their series with the Arizona Diamondbacks coming up. Let's take two.
So we heard yesterday about all the Ravens running back injuries. They get some help in the backfield. They add Latavius Murray to a one-year deal. Could be worth up to $2 million. Now, the 31-year-old was cut by the Saints on Tuesday after he didn't want to accept a pay cut. Now finds a home in Baltimore.
Do we know what he wanted? They wanted to cut him to? Like, is he making substantially more now than he
was scheduled to make $3.5 million. I'm not sure what they're trying to cut him down to. I have to look that up. But yeah, he's making close to what he was supposed to make in New Orleans. So
yeah,
good for him.
I'm just wondering if it was a net positive move overall. Like, hey, I'm making more with this team. I'm glad I did that and didn't accept that pay cut. Or if he's looking at it going, boy, I should have taken that pay cut because now I'm making less to play for a team I'm not as familiar with.
Yeah, you know, and also it could just be the fit and the way that he's been treated there and things like that, where he's like, okay, you know, he's been in the league since 2014. He was a Pro Bowler in 15. So, you know, that year he went over 1,000. So it's kind of like, you know, we were kind of talking a little bit about Jaren Reed. And,
yeah,
you know, and that was a huge financially, you know, and it didn't make sense to anybody here. But if you talk to him, what was the situation? It just wasn't right for him. He would rather be somebody somewhere else and, you know, take, I mean, we all think he looks crazy for taking a 50%.
Unless there's a big domino behind the scenes that didn't fall or did fall that we're not aware of.
Right.
I don't know how you make sense of that move.
Well, I'm not saying that there was, but that's something to consider.
Certainly.
You know, that
yeah,
you'd rather go somewhere for less than come back and take your with your tail between your legs and walk in and take whatever pay cut they
for need. $4 million more, I would put my tail.
You would put your tail between
yes,
your legs.
Yes,
yeah.
I'd walk in on all fours and drink out of a water bowl.
What if you had $30 million in the bank, Bob?
I could use $4 million more.
Well, bad news to the Red Sox. I don't think anyone else will mind, though. Chris Sale tested positive for COVID-19, so he has to sit out at least 10 days, and he'll miss his scheduled start Sunday against the White Sox. Will also not be available when the Red Sox come here. So for the Mariners, Blue Jays, Yankees, I'm sure they don't mind this news.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a full recovery for him, and I don't want him to go through any undue, you know, unpleasantness as it relates to this illness. But the fact that he's not available makes me happy. I don't want to face him. I don't want the Mariners to face Chris Sale. He's a stud.
Yeah.
Well,
no, I'm joking. No, it's just because Jim used to make this joke that Chris Sale could vote me.
Oh, because he's tall.
Like that.
It's the most ridiculous logic I've ever heard.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, he'd have to reach on you.
But does he know how to use it?
You know, this is, no, it's equivalent to like when you get, let's say a really bad call goes in your favor and you're like, all right, I'll take it. But, you know, you certainly don't want Chris Sale to, hopefully he gets full recovery and everything.
Yeah.
But, I mean, does that help? I mean, is it, I don't want to say, oh, it's a great news for, you know, it's not good news. He got COVID-19, but, you know, it's just, maybe it's, I mean, what if they end up winning that game and that's the difference in them making it into the playoffs?
Yeah, and he has a full recovery. He's totally
full recovery.
Fine. He just
right.
was not able to pitch that day, and the Mariners took advantage. That's all we're looking for. All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Coming up, the Bucks and Cowboys erase some concerns about the Seahawks. Tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob, live from T-Mobile Park on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Our thanks to Sean Doolittle, who joined us in the previous segment. If you guys missed that conversation, it will be available for you on the podcast page at 710sports.com after the show. So check that out. Good guy, good personality, and
thoughtful guy.
Hopefully he is racking up those hotel points because he has to extend his stay here because of a postseason run. That would be amazing.
It was pretty awesome. I mean, everybody, we were thinking, oh, Sean Doolittle, oh yeah, he's new in town. It was a great interview. He's a nice guy, and talking about his wife taking care of everything for him. And
it's weird to think of him as this old grizzled veteran. He's 34. On know. This team, that's old.
I would kill him to be 34, Bob.
He would take his life to be 34. But on this team, it's weird to think. I mean, is there anybody? Maybe Joe Smith, I think, is older. I think he might be 37.
Yeah.
But in terms of everyday players, those are probably the two oldest guys on the roster.
Well, you know, he'd probably tell you, we didn't ask him, it's a pretty good gig, right? I mean, if you love baseball but I just think it's interesting having to get, you know, you were talking about it being a cram session for him. You're right. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine, you know, every week? Now, I'm sure, you know, his pitching coach has like scouting reports on every guy and they probably sit in meetings and, you know, this is what this guy hits and everything. But boy, talking about studying your opponent. I mean, you study opponents in the NFL, but it's just so much more exact. You know, like you can't throw it in the bottom right hand, you know, segment of the box against this guy. He'll crush it. You know, I mean, it's so detailed.
Well, and they, you know, he was in the National League for a number of years. So he develops a familiarity with the opposition and, you know, oh, here's this guy on the Rockies or here's this guy on the Dodgers. And I know I got to throw him up and in. He's got a hole in his swing here or whatever. Now he's back to the American League, which is where he started, but he was gone for years, so the faces have changed.
Right.
These guys have their own individual scouting report, so to speak, just by memory. Like, oh, yep, I remember when I threw this guy that off-speed pitch, he put it in the third row back there. So he's coming here going, okay, now we're taking on this team. We're playing the White Sox. Who do they have now? You do have to cram. You're just not nearly as familiar with these guys.
I'm sure that some guys, you know, they change their swings and they fix things and stuff like that. You got to adjust with that. I mean, yeah, just very detailed, very particular for those guys.
So did last night's football game, and again, we touched on that briefly before we talked to Sean, but what a great way to open the season, man. That was a compelling game. It was back and forth. I guess if you love defense, maybe you didn't love it because there was a lot of yardage being put up, a lot of points. But it just offenses looked finely tuned, and those are guys that didn't play. I mean, Brady didn't play. Dak didn't play. Amari Cooper didn't play. Yet all of these guys had these huge games, both over 400 yards passing for the night, one with four touchdowns, one with three touchdowns. It kind of just hit the ground running. Does that make that case that, all right, yeah, you can sit your starters out and you're going to be just fine?
Well, the first thing I was thinking about was, and we like you said, we got a glimpse of Dallas just because of Hard Knocks, but how are their practices? What are their practices like? I got to imagine, you know, Bruce Arians is a really good coach. I came to really respect him. And Tom Brady obviously has more respect probably than any guy in the NFL, whether you like him or not. You know, I'm sure that they were practicing that way. And that's what we saw from the Seahawks, I guess. But I think guys are going to get tired. There are going to be a few mistakes here and there. There was 19 penalties in this, or was it 20? I was complaining
I think it was
19. About that. Yeah, and so, you know, but maybe some of that is going to be, you know, I just thought some of the holding penalties and stuff were very ticky-tack. But
I think the officials are finding their rhythm.
Yeah, I think that they'll, you know, which is a shame because, I mean, if you don't call one or you do call one, and you and I were arguing earlier about, well, it wasn't really arguing, but we were disagreeing.
You were yelling at me. It was hurtful.
But, you know, about the supposed push-off on
Godwin,
you know, or by him. But yeah, I mean, it made me think about, like, you can't underestimate the number of scratches. Like, the game that Kurt and I was doing, I think it was Denver, and I'm looking, there's like 25. You know, and it's Puna Ford. It's Chris Carson. You know, it was Disley. It's, you know, DK, Lockett. I was telling you guys earlier, I was talking to Dan Dakich back in Indianapolis, and he was like, yeah, so tell us about this Tyler Lockett guy, you know?
He's just now coming onto their radar.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was just like, is this guy the most underrated guy ever? I'm looking at his numbers. I'm like, no, we're pretty aware of the, you know, he's a good player. But, I mean, you're going to see all of those guys. We haven't seen any of it. So, I don't know. This is going to be very intriguing, I guess, because last year, I mean, it was the same thing, but everybody had the same deal going. There was no preseason, so you knew everybody. But other teams did it differently. You know, I was mentioning during the preseason, seeing Patrick Mahomes out there scrambling and taking hits.
Yep.
Kyler Murray was getting sacked in the preseason. So, you know.
Well, and people are tearing apart the Ravens because J.K. Dobbins tore his ACL or whatever happened with him in the preseason. And, you know, that puts the coaches in a position to have to defend. Why were you playing this guy to begin with? But if your team goes out there, and has a slow start to the season and they're getting lit up or they're not able to push the ball down the field, then it's, why weren't you putting these guys in there in the preseason? It's kind of a no-win spot for a coach.
It really is. And if you're a coach, I mean, would you be like, is the, you know, if you have like this standard of, hey, we're going to play our guys, you know, you get hurt playing, you know, it's like we're talking about with the professor with 17 games, all the injuries, and he's all focused on the injuries that will happen. Mm-hmm. I'm focused on the players and, you know, getting more yards and touchdowns and money and, you know, things like that. And it seems like the players mostly are all into that. And it's just about managing risk. I think as long as Pete Carroll's going to be here, you're not going to see anybody playing in the preseason if there is a preseason. But I just think this is going to be very, very different just because everybody did it differently this time. And we'll see what works. I mean, if they go out there and they're jumping off sides and, you know, they should have maybe had some game-like situations. But I have to say, watching the practices, especially in some of the, you know, receiver versus defensive back stuff and the 7-on-7, they're playing hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're going fast and they're competitive. They're competing, like Pete always says. But I mean, these guys are out there not worrying about getting hurt.
Right.
They're out there going full speed, trying to beat one another. And, you know, so I don't know, man. I'm looking up and down this, and we'll talk about it all day probably today, but looking up and down this, this roster and looking at the position groups, and I'm looking at like Indianapolis, and we're like, oh boy, we're worried about our corners. You know, I mean, they have some holes. They have a quarterback we don't really quite know about.
Yeah. Quick thought from Bobby Wagner, cut number 5, just talking about how they learned last year practice is everything, so they treat that like a game, just to sort of bolster what you were saying.
I think the biggest thing is, I mean, we always preach it, but I think it was more evident, you know, last year. You know, practice is everything. And between hitting at practice, visualizing at practice, the way you practice is how you're going to play in the game. And so, you know, when we knew we didn't have preseason games, there was a little bit more focus on making sure that you were getting your angles right, making sure you were fitting up, making sure you were doing all the right things, because you weren't going to get those, you know, full live reps.
You know, and maybe that's a silver lining to what took place last year, is everybody had to adjust. You had to adjust to what was in front of you. And, hey, we learned a new way to practice, not a new way, but maybe a more efficient way to practice. And maybe it got to a point that it worked so well for them that the preseason isn't as necessary as they once thought. That, hey, because of the adjustments we've made and the way we practice, the way we train, it's sort of rendered those games a little more meaningless for veterans, not guys that are on the bottom of, at the bottom of the roster trying to just find their spot, but the urgency to play Wagner, to play Russell, to play DK, those guys. Maybe that's been removed because of how they adjusted last year.
Well, yeah, and I think that Pete got on top of that quickly. He handled it really well. The COVID restrictions, all of that stuff, really well. And you saw it was like a competition. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that they handled that well and said, look, what are we going to have to do to make up for this? It's practice really hard and be very competitive. Don't want to get hurt. You know, we're not going down to the ground and everything, but all the other stuff. I mean, if somebody twists an ankle, you can't really help that. But I thought that, yeah, he jumped on that early, and he's we'll see. I mean, we'll see if he benefits from it in Indianapolis. But it's really hard to say in Indianapolis.
In Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, you can say it. Apparently,
I'm just showing off. Just showing off.
Just all had to show me up there, didn't you, Bob?
Coming up, your chance to win Mariners tickets to the final Friday home game. That's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Matt Taylor, the play-by-play voice, radio play-by-play voice of the Indianapolis Colts, will join us on the program, give us a preview of that matchup. So stay tuned for that coming up in a little less than 15 minutes. But we want to give you a chance to go to a Mariner game. It's time to send one of you to Mariners Fan Appreciation Night, which is taking place October 1st. So now the fifth caller who calls in 1 minute if you're listening on the radio, or 30 seconds if you're on the stream. Call 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. You'll win two tickets to see Ty France and the Mariners face off against Shohei Ohtani and the Angels for the final time this season. All game long, fans will have a chance to score prizes, and the night will end with a fireworks extravaganza as a thank you for the best fans in baseball. So there you go. That's what's on the line. So give a call, and best of luck to everybody out there. So the wild card race, you got five teams, Dave, within two games of the wild card. You got Boston and the Yankees there, and then the three teams below them that are chasing. Toronto, half game back. They've jumped in front of the Mariners. Oakland and Seattle both tied at 76 and 64 in the season, two games back. How about that? How about that for tension? How about that for every game mattering, every game meaning something, buying into the results of every game? I mean, it doesn't get any closer than that.
No, and we did this before. There's 22 games left. How many they got to win? Last time, 27, I was like 17. I think I said
16. We were right around the same. I mean, 22 games left. It feels like Toronto feels like they're rolling. I mean, it's hard to tell because you don't know what the teams around you are going to do.
Right.
But 22, I mean, can they win 15, 14? Can they go 14 and 8?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm looking at Arizona. I just take them series by series because that's what Bowers was saying. You know, I just kind of look at them series by series.
Well, you got to win that series. You want a sweep.
Well, you have to win it. Yeah. But, I mean,
I don't know that a sweep is ever a realistic expectation. Right. I don't know that you can be disappointed if you don't sweep a team. Now, if you blow an opportunity and say you won the first two and you've got a big lead in the final game and you blow it, okay, that's different. But going into a series, even as bad as the Diamondbacks are or Baltimore or any of these teams that have terrible records, the reality is, I think you're looking at, we need two of three. Yes, you want to sweep, but realistically, that's really hard to do.
Yeah. Well, and you got Arizona. So, yeah, you should win this one. I mean, if you go 1-2 against Boston, maybe that's okay if you go and take two in Kansas City. What about the four down in Oakland? What do you expect there?
Again, the goal in a four-game series on the road is take two.
Right.
That's the goal. I mean, but it's just it's different. What's the goal versus what do you need? What are they going to actually need to have done? And that's going to, again, depend a lot on what the teams around them are doing and, you know, how far or how close are they in the race? Are they dropping games? Are they now three games back, four games back? That's going to change the expectation or what you need to get done in a particular series. But typically, you go into a four-game road series anywhere, your goal is, all right, let's get two. You want to win the series, but let's take two of those.
Well, you know, it's funny. I remember listening to you and Graz. You used to always say, look, 10 games in baseball is like one game in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at the next two series, Arizona. And this is September 10th, right? September 10th, 11th, 12th, this series. And then, you know, Boston is the early part of next week. Is that more exciting? Is that more compelling to you than the Seahawks game this weekend against Indianapolis? Maybe not.
There's more consequence attached to it.
Yeah, but
for me.
Yeah, because you drop the opener. I mean, big deal.
Well, you got an extra game now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of 17. Everybody's fired up. This is a football town, and everybody is extremely excited. I'm extremely excited for the Seahawks, and if they lose, I will be very bummed. But I won't look at it as, where do they go now? What's going to happen now? I can't believe that happened. Whereas if the Mariners go out and say they do well against Arizona, but they drop two of three to the Red Sox, or they get swept, or just depending on how that goes, I'm gonna have a much more visceral reaction to that.
Right.
Because you're running out of time. You're just starting with this. This is game one of 17 for the Seahawks.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm looking at it's a 10 o'clock game in Indianapolis, or Indy. Just calling it Indy now, in Indy. And it's going to be done at 1 o'clock. Well, that's about the time that the Mariners are going to be playing their Sunday game against Arizona. And I'm like, I'm going to be racing home to watch that game.
I'm going to be at the game.
You're going to the game.
I'm going to the game. Yeah. So I'll probably watch the first half of the Seahawks, and then I'll, of course, be DVRing it. But, and then watch it here. They've got TVs here, so we'll keep an eye on what's going on. But, yeah, it's just, this is a unique time for a Mariner fan. It really is. I want to take advantage of it. I want to live in it. I want to just wear this intensity and just dive headfirst into it. We'll see where it goes. We'll see if they get there. But to me, I love baseball so much. And the fact that the Mariners are relevant, that it matters right now. Again, typically, and this is not a shot at the team, but normally we're in this time of year going, yeah, okay, that was who did what at the plate. Oh, good. He went 4-for-4. What did the Seahawks do? What happened with their roster? Who's hurt? Who's not? You know, that's just kind of how it's gone. But not this year.
I'll tell you what, I will not be disappointed if they're not, let's say they get to the last week and they're mathematically eliminated. I mean, I just think it's a bonus for them. The further that they go, that they're still in it, you know, and if they can do it all the way till the end of the season, you know, to the last series, I mean, it'll be heartbreaking if they don't make it. But I just, you know, I could see this place pretty packed and, you know, just giving the Mariners a standing ovation. And that last series would be Los Angeles Angels, October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, this is going to be a fun stretch, and if they don't get there, I hope it goes to the very end. You know, I don't want it to be, you know, hey, you got 10 games left and you're pretty much out of this whole thing. I want it to get down to the final series, get down to those final handful of games. That's just, there's nothing like that. All right, coming up, Colts play-by-play man Matt Taylor is going to join us for an in-depth look at this Indianapolis team. That's coming your way next as we continue live from T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.